Does the NSA, FCC, CIA, FAA, FBI, IRS, all other alphabet organizations were never part of the United States government.
Everything is commercial. So you were commercialized and turned into a person at birth via birth certificate. And these entities, all of these things that we've been taught are, they're usually referred to as bureaus. All of these bureaus are corporations.
It's the United Nations that issues Social Security numbers. I thought that was an American thing. I thought that was a United States thing. No, it's United Nations thing. We actually don't have a treasury. Our treasury is the IMF. The IMF took over that role for the United States. So we have like a secretary treasurer in our government structure. They're literally like an IMF employee.
And they basically meet on deciding the future of the world. That's if there was a mission statement and they were a company, which they are because a nonprofit's a company, it's to decide the future of the world.
I think, Jeremy, personally, that we all came to this planet at this point in time to facilitate this transition in a healthy direction for humanity, to help cause these wheels to turn so that humanity can turn a new leaf on this planet.
All right, guys, welcome back. We've got our favorite co-host, Aaron. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good, brother.
So today we're going to be picking up where we left off last week, which was on Aaron's channel when we did part one of 20 kind of secrets regarding the United States in general. So we covered 1 through 10 last week, and that will be on Aaron's channel, so definitely go check that out if you haven't yet before picking up with what we're going to go into today. So today we're going to be doing 11 through 20, and we're going to be getting into some good stuff regarding Vatican, presidents, Bilderberg Group, just to name a few things. So you'll definitely want to stick around for some of what we're going to go into, and I'll pass it off to you, Aaron, if you want to get us started.
Number 11 that we're going to begin with is a great way to pick up from last week's episode, talking about the alphabet agencies. Says the NSA, FCC, CIA, FAA, FBI, IRS, all other alphabet organizations were never part of the United States government, even though the US held shares of stock in the various agencies. So I think this will be one that you talked about, Jeremy, people getting either triggered by or upset about, or like, oh, that can't possibly be true. Give me a break. The CIA is not a government agency. The FBI is not a government agency. But when you look through the lens, remember, of contract law, Admiralty Maritime law, everything is a corporation, like private corporations doing business with each other. When you look at United States through that lens, then you can understand what we mean when we say that they're not government agencies, because they're all separate corporations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically this notion of everything is commercial. So you were commercialized and turned into a person at birth via birth certificate, and these entities, from policy enforcer to a court to all the way up to the banks to government organizations to the Fed, all of these things that we've been taught are, they're usually referred to as bureaus. All of these bureaus are corporations, and their names are more so just branding. Now, we don't say that to say that, like, this isn't some conspiracy theory that these entities don't exist or they don't work for the government, and that they aren't directly like interwoven, if you will, but more so to say that like each entity has an EIN and can take on debt and is more or less a business. It's all commercial.
So they're contracting with the government.
Yeah.
So it's like they're a governmental agency, but not technically.
Mm-hmm.
Number 12 says the United Nations through the IMF issues social security numbers. So right there, before we go further, that's a red pill, right? That it's the United Nations that issues social security numbers. I thought that was an American thing. I thought that was a United States thing. No, it's United Nations thing. And you'll see this theme through a lot of what we talk about here, that the UN, IMF, everything kind of goes back to them, because really the United States is, like what did it say in the beginning, a British colony. Just like how the first fact we read in episode 1 said that America is technically a British colony, because we never actually declared independence from Britain. So it's as if a bunch of British people came over and just started a new colony somewhere. That's what we're saying here is the same is true for the IMF and the United Nations. America is just kind of like a subsidiary of the UN. And so that's why now we see through the, you know, ESG stuff, there's a lot of United Nations dictates coming into America now and affecting the way we do our banking and lending and our Wall Street and medicine and everything is kind of becoming centralized under the UN because, as we said, centralization is always the game that they're playing.
The game of power and control is a game of shadows and trickery. So we have a government or even down to a political leader that you think is in charge or whatever it may be. And oftentimes it's not even nowhere close to what's actually going on. And I mean that literally a lot of the times in terms of location or in the United States. And yet the powers controlling it may be in Europe. They may be in Saudi Arabia. They may be in some of these wealthier nations. And so as far as the one that you just read, I haven't looked into this particularly, but this sounds like a gem in just being able to like give people proof, right? Like the person who's like, prove it. Because, you know, you have CFR codes, which stands for the Code of Federal Regulations, 20 CFR chapter 111, subpart B 422. So there's some solid codes in here that you can look into supposedly. So CFR is the application of United States code. So like, let's say you're studying 15 USC 1692, right? Like debt collection practices. There's a CFR, Code of Federal Regulations, that aligns with that 15 USC code that is meant to be used for enforcement. So CFR is powerful stuff. So it's cool to see that in there. I'm not familiar with 20 CFR though.
Well, I'll just keep reading the rest of this one. Says the application for Social Security is the SS-5 form. The Department of Treasury, aka the IMF, issues the SS-5, not the Social Security Administration. The new SS-5 forms do not state who or what publishes them. The earlier SS-5 forms state that they are Department of the Treasury forms. You can get a copy of the SS-5 you filled out by sending form SSA-L996 to the SS Administration. So that's another theme of like over time, these corporations stop leaving a trail for you to find out who owns what, who's really controlling what, because they want it to remain, like Jeremy said, an illusion or a shadow. Hard to pin down and see who really owns this, who's really dictating this. But as this is saying, we actually don't have a treasury. Our treasury is the IMF. The IMF took over that role for the United States. So we have like a secretary treasurer in our government structure. They're literally like an IMF employee, you know, working in the government. Because that is our treasury. So this is another one of the ways that they disguise where things are coming from is through like a Russian doll, right? There's so many things inside of things, which is why you got to trace it all the way back to what's the most early thing we can find in this trail. And it always goes back to the UN, the IMF, you know, which are, again, non-American organizations and structures. Let's take, for example, the idea that the military is ours. The Federal Reserve Bank is ours. It's our bank. It's our military. It's our president. It's our Congress. That's another one of these illusions and shadows that they use, that it's ours. But it's like, it's totally not, right? Like, we can't make a decision. We, the people, can't vote on what the military does. We can't make any decisions in what they do. We have no say over what they do. We can't decide what laws our Congress passes. They decide that. We can't change our currency. We can't stop inflation. We can't decide how the Federal Reserve prints or doesn't print our money. We have no say in that. So what's this word ours we keep using? These things are definitely not ours. And as we see now, that's because, in fact, yes, they are all private corporations that are contracting with each other and doing business with each other.
And this is where the education system is so important. And when I say important, I mean important to their larger plan. This notion of claiming things as ours is what's referred to as nationalism. And it's ingrained from the time you're in kindergarten and have to stand up and put your right hand over your heart and face the flag. These things are taught to us before we're of any semblance of sound age to think for ourselves. And by the time we are, the irony is we can't think for ourselves. We don't think for ourselves. And so, yeah, it's very interesting. A word as simple as our, why do we use it? Is it really yours? And that applies to both the ownership side, like you said, as well as the, you know, like, what does it mean to be an American? Or like, they'll say like our taxpayer dollars or like served our country. And it's like, okay, so that's an interesting one to focus on. So you served our country. Did you really? who are you actually serving? Now, that's can be very triggering, so I'll stop there. But these are interesting questions to pontificate upon.
Because we know who starts the wars. So yeah, who are you really fighting for in that sense? But intention is all that matters. You know, if someone goes to war to fight for their country, that's what they believe they're doing, then that's a righteous act on their behalf if their intention is purely to protect their homeland, protect their family or whatever. Agreed. But of course, the reality of what's happening at the puppeteer level is not quite like that.
Yeah.
13 says this, you're going to love this one, Jeremy. It's not the duty of the police to protect you. Their job is to protect the corporation and to arrest code breakers.
Yeah, this is a good one. I see we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different case laws that you guys can look into on this one.
Yeah, this is a well-established one.
Yeah, not familiar with any of the case laws because, in my opinion, case laws are good. Like, if you're, like, going to court or you need to lay out, like, an unbeatable affidavit or something, you need to prove shit. You know, like, case law is a way that you can draw upon that and put it in your statement of facts and everything like that. But as far as, like, most of this stuff, it's like, when you really know the stuff, you don't necessarily need case law. Case law is good if, like, you're still skeptical or you need it proof, if you will, like for the type of person who's like, I need proof, you know, then it can be really powerful. But yeah, at a basic level, I mean, we're always talking about this. I think we've done videos on this and stuff, but it's like at every level, right? So you've got the policy enforcers on the ground. That's like the police and the sheriffs. And then they work for the courts. They work for the local, like the state courts. And then there's one level above, and that's the federal courts. And then you got like the Supreme Court. And then all the way up to like government organizations and everything like that. And each one of them is a corporation with an EIN. And you can look these things up on Dun & Bradstreet. And so when we get into this system we have now, which is a statutory law, statutory man-made law, which is what we refer to as codes and statutes, they're not constitutional. They're not declarations. They're not about the people. They're statutes for persons to abide by, statutes for corporations to abide by, which is one of the multiple definitions of a person per Cornell law. Really, you start to realize without any law needed, any dictionary needed, you know, just doing your own due diligence, piecing things together at a more zoomed out perspective, you start to realize that all of this is in place for commercial reasons. And the statutes even are all in place to commercialize you. Even the act of driving, right, versus traveling. People that are in the sovereignty space are big on this one. People have the right to travel. That's completely different from driving. Driving requires a driver's license and is a commercial activity. And, you know, I won't get into that rabbit hole. I don't know if you've gone into that yet, Aaron, but just kind of understanding this notion that all they're really interested in is commerce, money, debt collection, and that's what the police are there to do. So if you break certain codes, statutes, all these man-made constructs, they are fining you, which produces the income for these corporations, for these businesses, and that's how that works.
I was just going to add to what you said that, yeah, case law is not a super strong thing to stand on in the law because it's just sort of showing you what a judge's opinion was in the past.
Yeah.
What precedents have been set in the past of how another judge interpreted something. So it's really good in the legal system because you're showing, hey, another legal judge saw the law this way. But law under natural common law, the law of the land, doesn't change and isn't up for precedent. It's like the law is the law. So you always want to stand on laws more than case laws.
Yeah.
But it is helpful to know so we understand, oh, this is how the system has played this law, how they've worked it in the past, how they'll probably try to work it again. These are the precedents that the legal system has set in the past. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good, great way to explain it. Interpretation is the big word there. If you take away one word, it's all about interpretation. And that's what's sketchy. That's what's sketchy about the law is that interpretation can really go any way.
It can be weaponized.
And then it can be weaponized. And that also kind of boxes us in over time because someone 100 years ago interpreted it this way. And now this is the way we need to do things because we need to set a precedent and we need to set a standard that we're consistent. And that's how we get boxed into these things where we have unfair rulings over time and they don't seem to change, or at least they change very slowly.
Right, exactly. Now, this one is very short and to the point, but also has huge implications, right? It says, everything in the United States is for sale. Roads, bridges, schools, hospitals, water, prisons, airports, etc. So we touched upon this in our fourth episode on the prison system, how it's all privatized and commercialized so that, again, really every great evil happens for this one reason, right? Is that it's commercial, something is commercialized, which means somebody is incentivized to cause this problem to happen so that they can profit off of it. So that's why we, part of the shift in consciousness that has to happen on this planet for us to take these systems back and move them in a positive direction is that we have to de-incentivize corrupt financial gains. Like, hey, nobody should be making money off of throwing people in jail because people want to make money. So they're going to make sure they get as many people in jail as possible, whether it's right or wrong. Same thing with money and politics, right? Nobody should be able to buy a politician's loyalty. Politicians are supposed to serve the people. So getting money out of these systems and institutions is going to be one of the most important switches, I think, that we have to make.
Yep, you nailed that. It's basically what I was going to speak on as well, is the incentive structures have to change. And right now they're all set up in a very specific way because everything is commercial and the game that people want to play is money and power. And so corruption breeds itself. It's not any more complicated than that. It just breeds itself.
Yeah. And you gave a really good description of the incentivizing that the system relies upon in the last episode. So we're just repeating it again, really.
Yep.
15 says, the UN, United Nations, has financed the operations of the United States government for more than 50 years and now owns every man, woman, and child in America. The UN also holds all of the land of America in fee simple. I don't know that last part about holding the land in fee simple. I'd like to look into that, but I can confirm that my research has shown me at least that the UN has financed the United States government for at least 5 decades and owns every man, woman, and child in America through the birth certificate process is what that's referring to.
It's like what we talked about earlier with the conversation of leverage. And when the United States puts itself, or in the past has put itself in positions where it does not have much leverage, it tends to, i.e. it's on the brink of bankruptcy, puts itself in a position where it has to negotiate what it has to negotiate in order to continue on. The show has to go on, right? Somehow. So all of a sudden, salvage liens get put on us. We get turned into property and then income tax and all those wonderful things. So, but these systems are not that old and they're quite ripe for disruption. We just have a bit of turbulence before we get there.
Fact number 16 says, New York City is defined in the federal regulations as the United Nations, which is why Rudolph Giuliani stated on C-SPAN that New York City is the capital of the world. He was correct. For once, he told the truth. New York City / the UN is the capital / government of the New World Order, which is the United Nations. And then it has a reference here, which I looked up. And in the Code of Federal Regulations, it is quite interesting. It says, as it pertains to birth registration documents, we may enter into an agreement with officials of a state, including for this purpose, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and New York City, to establish as part of the official birth registration process, a procedure to assign social security numbers to children. So what's interesting there, I think, is those are all the districts or territories of the United States Corporation, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, U.S. Virgin Islands. Those are properties of the corporation United States. So it also lists New York there, which would mean that what this fact is saying is that that belongs to the United Nations, because that's the United States Corporation belongs to the United Nations. And it names New York City essentially in the Code of Federal Regulations as sort of the capital for the United Nations. So just kind of reinforcing how much our country is really a, you know, territory of the United Nations and is really ran at the top of the pyramid by the UN, not by us, we the people. Continuing this thread, 17 says, just like Vatican City and the financial district of London, Washington, D.C. is a sovereign city-state with its own constitution and flag. The flag depicts 3 stars, one for each city-state, with Washington, D.C. representing the New World Military, London representing the New World Monetary System, and the Vatican representing the New World Religion. Great Britain is owned by the Vatican. In fact, the Pope claims to own the entire planet through the laws of conquest and discovery. And then it shows the treaty and the papal bull that's citing. So I guess before I read the last part, I want to hear your comments on that. Have you seen that flag that they're talking about?
No, I haven't. this is more in the realm of American nationals and stuff like that, like to study this stuff. But what I will say is that this is definitely facts regarding London, for example, is its own territory. Like it is 100% independent from Europe and is solely owned by the crown. And then you have Washington, D.C., which people think is like just another city in the United States. And it is absolutely not just another city in the United States. Washington, D.C. is our version of their London, which is like, you could just think of these things as owned by the crown. And then I'm not too versed on it, but we get into some weird stuff surrounding, like, you probably know better than me in this realm, Aaron. Isn't, unless you're born in Washington, D.C., you're not actually a United States citizen? Isn't there some stuff like that?
Yeah, it says that taxes are only voluntary unless you live in Washington, D.C. or any one of those territories I just read, because those are owned exclusively by the corporation, United States, all caps. Then if you're a resident there, you do have to pay taxes.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. Yeah. So I think you said that backwards on accident, but your taxes are voluntary unless you live in those areas.
Yeah, unless you live in those areas, yeah. Your taxes are voluntary.
Yeah. I would consider these like more foundational stuff that, like, for example, if you guys want to learn more about this, you can check out like David Robinson's books or people who teach more of the stuff around like straw man or common law basics definitely focus heavily on this. I've become a bit more practical, so this isn't like top of mind to me anymore. I focus more on the financial side of things, which doesn't require me to use this in my day-to-day, but I do remember learning a lot of this. And then, you know, this definitely, Aaron touched on the Vatican a little bit, which is important to understand, at least at a basic level, some background on the Vatican, what it actually does, what it actually holds. And it sounds like we're going to be getting into a little bit more stuff regarding the Pope and Vatican and such. So anything you wanted to share, Aaron?
Yeah, just going to put a picture of this, the Washington, D.C. flag that they're talking about here. Okay. This is the flag with the three stars where it's saying, we know that they like to use symbolism a lot to mask and disguise how they're setting things up. So this is what the flag looks like that represents, it says, three different city states. D.C. represents the military. London represents the monetary system. The Vatican represents the religious system. All of these under the umbrella of the United Nations.
I haven't seen that flag before, have you?
Not till today.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, because remember, we just have to keep tracing things back to who owns that and who owns that and who owns that. And when you look at these nation states, DC, London, who owns that, it always goes back to the United Nations ultimately. Last point on this one says, a pope can abolish any law in the United States. The pope's laws are obligatory on everyone. Throughout history, ancient and modern, popes have ordered the enslavement and genocide of millions. So I can't attest to this in terms of my own research. I haven't looked into this much because, like you, it's not super important to me. But in the common law space where I study and interact with people, this is something you hear all the time, which I don't fully understand to the full depth of other topics, but this idea that everything's owned by the Vatican, everything goes back to the Vatican, everything traces back to the Vatican, which means ultimately the Pope is the highest authority in the world, above the president and anywhere else. But they don't really want you to know that, because everyone would be like, hey, what the hell is this? I didn't sign up for this system. The Pope gets to rule over me. So again, it's always the pyramid scheme strategy of top down disseminating power through the ranks so that it looks like people have power who really don't, right? Who even they're controlled by people above them.
Well, even before I had my eyes open to the sovereignty stuff, before I ever kind of started focusing on learning it, you know, you come across stuff in the spirituality space, right? Because we're all like seekers. So you come across different stuff that normal people would write off and not listen to. And you sometimes, you know, you do your own research occasionally. So, you know, we've all heard stuff like that. And in my earlier years of like being into things that others would call conspiracies, I definitely like focused way too much time on shit that is never going to impact my life in any way.
Yeah.
And then at some point along the line, I just kind of had to realize, like, am I like, why am I doing this? Where is this coming from? And for myself, and I'm not speaking or trying to project this on anyone else, but just in my own journey for myself, the answer to that was actually trauma. I was recreating chaos in my life. Fear, these familiar states that I experienced in my upbringing, if you will. And instead of healing, I was bypassing with my favorite theories and conspiracies and how fucked the world is and blah, blah, blah. And so I say all that to say that I see that in a lot of my brothers and sisters, and they definitely don't want to hear this because it's enjoyable to just, what's the next thing we can get upset about, or what's the next rabbit hole? And look, I'm all for the rabbit holes. That's literally my brand. That's what this series is, literally the rabbit hole. Yeah, but like, what are you doing all of this for? Like, so somewhere along the line, and maybe this is just maturity, I'm not sure. But like, I had to just realize, like, if I'm going to put in this amount of time and effort and like focus, what am I getting out of it? Like fear? Like, that's not a good trade-off.
Yeah.
So I stopped placing my focus on like abstract as much, and I started to get more practical. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think that's why people like yourself will tell me like that I have like a very unique brand and teaching style, because most people who like are into the stuff that I'm into or teach on the stuff that I teach on do so in a very abstract, non-practical way. And I've learned over time that it's best to simply focus on actual like solutions and be practical about it. So I say all of that to say that some of these realms that we're touching on aren't, to me, it's like, cool, you want to argue that this is false? Okay. Argue that it's true? Okay. Do either really matter? It can be fun to look into first principles, but I have kind of graduated to focusing on things where like I got receipts, if you know what I mean, checks, contracts, real life transformation from the studies. And that is ultimately, hopefully, if you guys are watching our channels, that's the goal. Like, what good does it do you to be like, oh, I've been into this shit? Like, I get so many DMs from people like, I've been into this shit since 2004. And it's just like, cool. Tell me what kind of results have you gotten? Like, how has your life changed? And it's like, oh, well, it hasn't. It's like, well, then what are you doing? Are you just recreating trauma? Are you spiritually bypassing? Like, what's going on here? Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
So I'm just sharing that because it's been my experience, and I have a hunch some of you listening to this may not want to hear that, but it's like, don't get caught up on like every little thing we're sharing. This is cool foundational stuff, but allow it to be a stepping stone to get more and more practical in regards to how you can structure your lifestyle so that you can operate in the most empowering ways. And knowing everything about the Vatican and the Pope, it's like, what are you going to do with it?
It's not going to help you get out of debt. It's not going to help you spiritually evolve, you know?
Right. Yeah, most people's biggest issues are debt and taxes. So those are the things that I decided to focus on.
You know, these facts can be useful in some ways at times, maybe to get someone to raise an eyebrow or get curious and go, wait, is that true? I'm going to look into that. Exactly. And then that could be their red pill that kind of wakes them up to the matrix that they're not seeing. Yep. So like there's some value in knowing this stuff, It's not good to just focus on this stuff and obsess over it. And again, another way of just disowning your power and projecting it onto these elite bankers and whatnot, like that's not healthy. And I think that that's the version of victimization we see on the right these days. On the left, it tends to be more of like social justice, victimization flavor. On the right, it's more like disempowerment, freedom and world power issues, victimization. Both sides are doing the same thing, right? Outsourcing their power to others, playing the victim. So all we need is the bigger picture, is what we're really saying. Just see the bigger picture of what this message is. Freedom is an inner state of being that comes from knowing who you are. No one has authority over you inherently. Your only obligation to others is to do no harm. And beyond that, live your life as you see fit and be what the universe wants you to be. That should all be obvious stuff, that these facts are self-evident inside of us. But we have to sort of remember them because we've been so deeply conditioned that we are under someone's authority and whatnot. So as we go into 18, this is kind of another one of those topics that we don't need to go deep into, but I think Jeremy has a lot to say on this idea. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, Jeremy. It says, Wednesday, May 21st, 2008, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton secretly attended a closed annual meeting with approximately 130 of the world's most insidiously tyrannical power broker elites known as the Bilderberg Group. So I know some people are probably familiar with the Bilderberg Group, but can you just give us like the brief overview of what that group is and what they do in the world?
So for those of you who are on Twitter, you probably saw recently how the WEF just had their Davos meeting or whatever, and people were like camping out and everything like that, reporters trying to get them to talk, and they would catch people walking in between conference rooms. And of course they wouldn't say anything, but they'd be filming them. And you know, you have everyone from the CEO of Pfizer, you have ex-presidents, you have the CEOs of all the top companies. So whether we're talking about like the food industry or gas and oil or medicine or tech, right? Of course, Bill Gates is there. All these types of things. You even have occasionally, see, you don't really have celebrities who are just celebrities. So you don't have like Hollywood there, for example. You might have like producers, right? So you might have the people who run the show of Hollywood, but you don't have like celebrities there or actors or anything like that. But so you got the big dogs there. And basically what the Bilderberg Group is I believe it's a nonprofit, and they basically meet usually annually or biannually. I know that part's
nonprofit. That's a good one.
So they usually meet one or two times a year, I believe.
Forget the G7. If there's one party leaders want to be invited to, it's Bilderberg.
And basically what they do is they get together, and it's also not just Americans, by the way. It is basically the elite of the world. So exactly like we've been talking about. So there's going to be some Europeans, there's going to be some Saudi money there, and they discuss what they believe to be the best future for the world. And everyone there has to sign NDAs, and there's sworn contracts, and no one's allowed to record anything. And it's very, very, it's kind of ritualistic and very traditional and protected. It's not like Davos and the WEF where they're like, you know, you can go on their YouTube and they'll tell you exactly what the plan is, or you can, you know, you can see videos now of any talk that went on at Davos. You can see it. Like, they're not trying to hide it from you. It's very different than that. And so there's been some excellent like investigative journalism books on Bilderberg and people trying to get close and almost getting killed and stuff like that. So that's definitely entertaining to dive into and quite informative. But the idea is exactly what I was talking about in part one. I don't think these are all evil megalomaniacs. I think that when you once again go from, let's say, nothing to a billionaire, imagine what that does to your ego and your views of society. I can imagine it would be extremely easy to think that now I know better than everyone else knows. Look at what I've done. Look at what I've accomplished. You haven't accomplished this, so you should probably listen to me.
Yeah.
And I would probably feel like, if I was run by my ego, I would probably feel like I need to now use my power and influence to push my ideas forward. That's exactly what the WEF is. That's exactly what the Bilderberg Group is. So yeah, basically they meet recurringly, and you know, you got the Clintons in there, the Bushes. And that's another funny thing is people think that the political sides of the aisle hate each other. It's like, no, they're all hanging out. Come on, don't play yourself. Yeah, so they're all in there. Different corporations who are supposedly like competitors, they're all in there, like, you know, so it's all a little smorgasbord there. And they basically meet on deciding the future of the world. That's if there was a mission statement and they were a company, which they are because a nonprofit's a company, it's to decide the future of the world. Very similar to the WEF. The difference is that the Bilderberg Group is, they go about it in a secretive way where you don't know what their agenda is. And then the WEF is the opposite. They're trying a different approach where you know exactly what the agenda is and they're very vocal about it. So that's that. As far as Barack and Hillary meeting, once again, I don't know. Can't speak to that. Doesn't matter to me. But the concept of the Bilderberg Group is important because if you guys have ever seen those charts, maybe we can put one on screen of the few companies that basically own the world. The CEOs and the it's not even the CEO. See, people, that's another way that they create the illusion. Mm-hmm. A CEO is someone who you can just hire. A CEO, you know, you pay them a few million dollars a year and they're a high paid employee. They're still an employee. They're not the trustee. They're not the controller of the holding company that owns multiple of these franchises and multiple of these big businesses that you've never heard of. Like, the real owners, the controllers, are the ones going to these meetings. It's not even usually the CEO. So I do want to share that as well. But yeah, basically there's just these, it's just another one of those organizations, and they meet to decide what's best for all of us. Chattel.
All the plebs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they want, right? They want to create this illusion of authority because, hey, look at us. We are wealthy billionaires who fly around the world in private jets. And they want us to watch them on our TV screens and be like, oh, I only make 45K a year. Like, who am I to question them? Right?
That's great.
That's how they want us to think. But again, freedom is an inner state of being that is not attached to anything like money. You don't need money to know you're free and that nobody has the right to rule over you. We're just disempowered. So it's like, I don't care how much money you people have, because we know that the financial systems of the world are completely distorted and corrupted to funnel as much of the money as possible to a small handful of banking families. And so it's not that, oh, these people are just so much smarter than all of us and so much better at making money. It's that they were born into a system that has been geared and catered towards them for hundreds of years now, where all the money that is printed by the Federal Reserve is getting funneled to the same people over and over. Like, even if you look at Amazon, right? Like, everyone in the country is buying stuff from Amazon. Who owns Amazon? Jeff Bezos, one of the wealthiest people in the world. So everything Amazon does just goes ultimately to Jeff Bezos. Yeah, there's other people in there getting paid, but nowhere near as much money as the founder makes. That's the way that the banks work and everything works. So it's a corrupted system that was built to create these massive wealth disparities so that people like the Davos Group, the Bilderberg Group, can rise to these positions of power where they control every institution, every system, all the governments. And then, yeah, then they can get together and get on a screen. And even though they're non-elected officials that none of us have decided should rule over us, they can just look at the TV screen and tell you how they're going to make your decisions for you, because they've centralized that much power. So they're kind of being like, hey, what are you going to do about it, pleb? Number two, don't you think we're more well-equipped to decide your future than you are? Of course you do, right? Because you don't make that much money. And, you know, we can decide how things happen in the world because we have power. So we'll just continue to allow those kinds of groups to make those decisions until we wake up to our inherent freedom, the freedom of our true nature, which I think, Jeremy, I see a mass awakening to right now, especially in response to the WEF. I'm sure that I'm a bit in a bias chamber because of the channels I follow and people I listen to, but all I see on YouTube and Instagram are people, even Elon Musk, right, at this point, calling out the WEF, saying, wow, how cringy is this? This like James Bond villain is trying to tell us that we're going to own nothing and like it. Definitely not cooperating with these people. So it seems like the collective consciousness is really waking up to who these people actually are versus who they're presenting themselves to be on camera and what they actually want. And they're really not even hiding it that much what they really want, but even though you'll own nothing and like it is kind of a disguise for what they really mean. What they really mean is we're going to own everything and you're going to own nothing. So they're much more vocal than they used to be, I think, in the past, but there's still a lot of hidden motives behind the things that they're saying at these meetings.
Yeah, I think that you would never see Elon buy Twitter and do what he's done in regards to free speech if we weren't in a fourth turning. And I think that history repeats itself and we're in the tail end of the part of the macro cycle where things need to be brought to light, and it's the most aggressive period of that. And that's why I referred to it as earlier when I said we just have some turbulence first, because it's never a smooth process shining a flashlight on darkness. But that goes hand in hand with the video that I just put out regarding AI and everything like that. So it's like, before we can have conversations around what these new systems look like, what new innovations, disruptions, technologies, way of doing things, etc., look like, we have to become aware of what they've been. And we can't even agree on what they've been because they've been cleverly structured. So I think that's where we're at.
I would certainly agree. Yeah. Now, we're going to close off with a topic we're all very familiar with, these last two facts. 19 says, every American man, woman, and child is held as human collateral. Our birth certificate represents each of us as a living stock or livestock to be traded on the world market via the FTC, the IMF, and the most ancient of scams known throughout the last millennium to every oppressed country the world over as the banking and loan industry. So banking and loaning has been used as an enslavement device for thousands of years, again, going back to ancient Babylon and probably earlier than that. But we actually have banking records from Babylon that show usury being done, the same exact system, basically, that controlling American people today was exactly what the Babylonians were doing, you know, 5,000 some odd years ago. Mm-hmm. So with each person's value calculated at an average lifetime estimate of revenue generated via taxation. So I want to throw something on the screen to give you guys some evidence of this. We've talked about how, you know, your Social Security is bonded and traded on the bond market. because it's actually part of a trust that the government creates. Some people call it the Cesta QV Trust, the minor estate. There's lots of names for it. Your straw man's trust. Your birth certificate gets a CUSIP as well and is bonded and traded on the bond market. Somebody told me, Jeremy, that the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. I have not verified if that's true, but if it is true, it means this is how much more money is running through the bond market, because every single man, woman, and child has multiple bonds that are being traded. And we are traded like a stock that can rise or fall. And I know this because I've looked up both my Social Security CUSIP and birth certificate CUSIP on a bond market website called gmeiutility.org. Most people have done this in the common law space, so this won't be novel to some of you, but to others, it will be kind of an eye-opening realization. You can type in your Social Security number in this website, including the dashes, and it'll actually show you how many times your Social Security bond has been traded and by what companies and the name of those companies and different facts about them. So I'll put mine on the screen, because when I looked at my Social Security, Jeremy, it showed that almost 49,000 companies have traded my Social Security bond. So have been profiting off of a legal document under my name is what that means. And I've been none the wiser to this, that there's a security in my name that people are trading, right? So this is what we call securities fraud. They're committing securities fraud with your social, your birth certificate, even your court cases, prison sentences. Everything gets a CUSIP number, because a CUSIP is what they can bond and turn it into a kind of stock that they can trade. So, you know, every prisoner, for example, is going to need food and shelter and have a cost to being in prison. Your life, your labor under your Social Security is bonded and traded, and just keeps growing and growing as they trade it. And again, you're not told about this. And technically, you're actually supposed to be paying taxes on these bonds in your name. So they're also forcing you to commit tax fraud without knowing it. So this is the birth certificate thing, the CUSIP thing is such an important, I think, realization for us to have, that there has been a system created by the elites that is very secretive that we've not been taught about, so that they can profit off of essentially our very being, our very existence, more so our labor. But as we said in our previous episodes, this is how they do it. They back the currency based on your labor, every cent that is ever going to go through you in your life, loans, income, credit cards, you name it. They're estimating that and then bonding it and trading it on the bond market. It's pretty mind-blowing.
Bravo. That was a high-level overview.
You can tell I've studied this one a little bit, huh?
Hey everyone, thank you for watching today's video. I hope that you were truly blessed by it. And I wanted to let you know that I'm really excited to now be partnering with an amazing conscious supplement company called Organifi. A lot of you know that I'm also passionate about holistic health and nutrition, and Organifi has been a staple in my daily health routine for a very long time. They make the most delicious, organic, and high-quality superfood products that I've ever come across. And as you know, a healthy body is a great benefit for spiritual growth, because the health of your body directly translates to the health of your mind. Everything is connected. So feeding your body with high vibrational superfoods straight from the earth is one of the best ways to create that environment for a healthy mind. But getting all the superfoods that your body needs in one day can admittedly be a little bit tough. And that is where Organifi can add a ton of value to your life. I personally start every day off with green, which is Organifi's really delicious blend of 11 superfoods like ashwagandha, chlorella, and moringa. And then in the middle of the day, I'll usually have a scoop of red, which is a delicious energy blend full of 13 adaptogens and antioxidants from berries to recharge your mind and body with a delicious blend of organic superfoods. Your body is an amazing organic machine, but it needs the right fuel and signals to function at its best. And red is full of adaptogens sourced from organic herbs and medicinal mushrooms. And these are compounds that balance hormones, prime your energy pathways, and alleviate stress. So instead of crushing your adrenal system with huge doses of caffeine every day, adaptogens work with your body and give you natural, sustained energy all throughout the day. What's most important to me, though, about Organifi is the way that they go above and beyond to ensure the cleanest and purest ingredients in all of their products. They are USDA certified organic, non-GMO, gluten-free, certified glyphosate-free, and absolutely zero fillers. So I never go anywhere without Organifi, and I never miss a day without taking it. And Organifi is offering a super generous discount of 20% off of your entire order when you use the coupon code ABKEY at checkout. So if you want to upgrade your health regimen with Organifi, you can click on the link in the description box below to learn more about all the amazing products that they offer. And I promise you that your mind and your body are going to thank you for it.